On that note,
the time is now 7 o'clock. I'm calling to order the Pappy Missouri River Natural Resources Board of Directors meeting for May 12th, 2016. Please raise the pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
A copy of the Open Meetings Act, Nebraska Rev State Statute 84-1407 through 84-1414 is posted on the back wall of the meeting room. Prior to turning to the agenda for tonight's meeting, I would like to announce the procedures that will be used for this meeting. With respect to each agenda item, the directors will hear the subcommittee chairperson's report with their proposals and recommendations. Then the public will be given the opportunity to address the board chairperson. Lastly, the directors will discuss the item and take action. All questions and comments will be addressed to the board chair. We ask the public not interrupt the director's discussion and actions. Thank you. With that, quorum call, please.
Bonnet.
Present.
Fred Conley.
Here.
John Conley.
Here.
Fowler. Frost.
Here.
Jeff.
Yes.
Leahy.
Here.
Caesar.
Here.
Thompson.
Here.
Poodle.
Here.
And chairperson.
Here. And we do have an excused absence for Director Tim Fowler. Moving on to agenda item 4, adoption of the agenda. Second. A motion and a second. Roll call on the motion.
Fred Conley.
Aye.
John Conley.
Yes.
Ross.
Yeah.
Jeff.
Yes.
Leahy.
Yes.
Caesar.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Woodle.
Yes.
Bonnet.
Yes.
And chairperson.
Yes. Agenda item 5, adoption of the agenda consent, or consent agenda. I'm sorry.
So moved.
Second. We have a motion and second. Roll call on the motion, please.
John Conley.
Yes.
Frost.
Yeah.
Jeff.
No.
Leahy.
Yes.
Caesar.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Poodle.
Yes.
Bonnet.
Yes.
Fred Conley.
Aye.
And chairperson.
Yes. Agenda item 6, I have a proof of publication of the meeting notice in my hand. It will become part of the permanent record of this meeting. Moving right along to agenda item 8, agency and association reports and presentations. 8A, Natural Resources Conservation Service report to Neil Jensen. Good evening, Neil.
Good evening. Okay. First thing, with a little bit of a wet spring this year, we have gotten a lot of requests to put drain tile in. And because of that, we did do a news article statewide as a reminder to producers that they need to ensure that if they put drain tile in, that they're not converting a wetland. If they convert a wetland, then that affects their farm program payments, crop insurance, all NRCS conservation programs. And we always tell people to plan early. A lot of times how it works is neighbor hires a contractor to come put it in, and then all of a sudden all the neighbors see him out there, and so we get a phone call and say, he's here, we want a determination done tomorrow. Doesn't happen that way because we get over 400 requests a year for doing HEL and wetland determinations, and we have to bring in staff from another county. They don't allow us to do a wetland determination within your own county. And so it takes a little bit to schedule all that work. But the next thing on a list, I was thinking I was bringing good news when I first brought this on my report, and I had to actually rewrite my report and send it back into again. But the CRP program, they had their general sign up. The CRP with the 2014 Farm Bill has a 24 million acre limit, which is about 20,000 less than what it was at the high point probably about 10 years ago. This time around, they had 3 million acres worth of applications, 26,000 offers for the general sign-up, and another 4,600 for the grasslands program, which is a new CRP program where they can put grass in instead of cropland. But they only accepted under the general sign up 411,000 acres, which was about 25% of the applications, and the grassland they only accepted about 10% of the applications. For this NRD, when I first looked at the report, I thought, oh, we had 42 approved, and I thought, man, we did good. No, we had 42 applications that were submitted, and zero were approved. That's how competitive this. I've never seen that happen for us, that we never had a single general application approved. And so I guess the good thing is that these people do have the opportunity to go into the continuous sign-up. We've had a huge workload. If you happen to read my report last year, we've had over 181 applications for continuous sign-up already this year, and that's about 3 to 4 times what we normally get. So people are getting their land into CRP, but it's under the continuous program, not the general. Last little item I've got, Dan Gudenkopf, who is our technician in Tecama, has accepted the position in Blair. Doesn't help us a whole lot because it still leaves us then with a position in Tecama open. So, but we've already started the process to advertise for that position. We're still in the process of advertising for a compliance specialist to help us on the 1026 wetland calls that we get. So we're still kind of about 2 staff persons down yet. So any questions?
Yeah. Your first subject, why are you not allowed to make a determination within your own county?
It's separation of duties so that I guess the concern was, you know, and it makes it somewhat easier. You're working with these people daily, all the time, and so it's probably easier if somebody coming in and.
So you have to go to some other county, and some other county employee has to.
Yep.
Makes a lot of sense for government.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any further questions for Neil? Right. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Bill.
All right, moving on to 8B, Nebraska Association of Resource Districts, Director Rich Teaser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The NARD will be meeting for their June 13th and 14th for their 2016 Blue River Basin Tour, and I will be attending the meeting. I think Director Bonnet will be attending the actual tour, and you have in your packet the information if you're interested. Please sign up with Jane, and looking forward to that, and that concludes my report.
Thank you, Director Teaser. Moving on to 8C, Legislative Report. Josh Blackwell.
Good evening.
Good evening, Steve.
With the conclusion of the primary election, the field is now set for the November elections for the Nebraska legislature. With the exception of one district in South Omaha, District 7, there's a 10-vote difference between second and third place, and so that outcome will likely depend upon the early voting ballots and the provisional ballots, which are yet to be determined. But have a report that we've prepared that I'd like to go ahead and distribute. It tells you all the candidates in
thank you.
Each of the legislative districts across the state, and there's biographical information. And so now that the candidates are known, our team will continue meeting with candidates throughout the summer to build bridges and relationships. There'll be a number of new senators. I would point out that there were a half dozen incumbent state senators who finished second or third in the primary election. Most of those did advance to the general regardless. Chris, as you know, the flood control and water quality enhancement bond authority proposal failed by a very narrow margin, less than 2,000 votes. A switch of only 975 votes would have reached an opposite conclusion, so it was quite close. That concludes my report, unless there's any questions.
Any questions from directors? Thanks, Steve. All right. On to 8D, Lower Platte River Quarter Alliance. We have a written report from Megan Sittler. I do believe, Mike Sotak, did you have a brief presentation for us this evening on the 240th Street project?
I apologize for the informal attire. I was at a baseball game, and my wife was supposed to meet me and bring me pants, and she got held up at work.
Sure.
Good to see you, Mike.
Shorts and all.
So we're here to give a little bit of an update on the Elkhorn River project that, as you know, and I think last month Bob was here from our office and gave you a little bit of an update on that the project basically was complete. So since then, we've had some excitement out there, and the project is actually operating now. So I know some of you have seen the project, but we're going to bring a couple pictures to you just to show you how it's going on so everybody has a good understanding of what's going on in case you get any questions. So I got control mic, right? Oops. Oh, there we go. So, again, I'm going to whistle through some of these because I know you've seen these slides at least once, maybe twice before. Project area here, 240th Street, just above the confluence of Elkhorn and the Platte here and south side of Harrison Street there, so just on the north side of Douglas County. You'll remember that during the design of the study phase, we went in and we did a bank line analysis, and we looked at how the river migrated over the years and came up with a couple solutions to run by everybody in alternatives analysis and went to the core to get their input on things and came up ultimately with a design solution of which this is a close-up of where we basically, to avoid having to permit a project, we basically went in, we did excavation in the uplands. We never touched anything below the ordinary high water mark of the riverbank. And so for that reason, we didn't have to go to the Corps for a permit. So it worked out pretty well with that respect. So. So what we're looking at there is through the middle of the project, we've got the pilot channel, we call it there. The hatched area is where we take the excavation from the pilot channel and piled it up. So you'll see this in some of the pictures when we get to it here. But we basically dug a 50-foot wide pilot channel through it. That the idea was up at the top, right up here, what we call the plug, we left the bank in a little high so that once the river did get above that, then it would get into the pilot channel and start flowing down. Additionally, there's another plug at the bottom of the project here as well. And so until the river got to a certain stage, the project really wasn't going to function, and we didn't know how long that was going to be or when it was going to be. So kind of a new approach to this, how we did that. On the outside of the bend, eventually we anticipate that because of the grade of this, so the grade of this obviously is steeper than the water going all the way around this curve and back to here. So because of that, water's going to find the least path that's going to flow in this channel. So that's a little bit of a – you've seen that. So in the project, here's a picture of them doing the site clearing. So this entire area – I'll go back real quick. Basically, everything you see inside the dashed lines there, we cleared a lot of trees out there. They harvested a lot of walnut trees. We used a lot of walnut trees for some of the tree revetment structures, green bank stabilization measures that we used along the outside bend here, and then they burned a lot of cottonwoods on site there. So here's a picture. The contractor was Niewaner Construction from Ottawa, Iowa. Very good to work with. Did a great job. Hustled. Got the project done on time, on budget. Here's a picture of him clearing some of the trees there. And some more clearing going on here. Here's some of the stabilization structures being built. These are those walnut trees we talked about. So basically what we did is we dug a trench and they picked these. They picked the walnut trees up and kind of held them like that. And then they set them down in the bank. Another hoe came in, dropped sand on top of it, and the idea is that eventually that these will be along the outer bank of the river eventually when it forms, and they'll help provide bank stabilization along the outer bend of the river there. We also did some riprap in some other places to give us a little bit more protection in that. So this was a mix of kind of green and a hard or gray protection measure, so we mixed them both in there. So here's a picture of them. We had both on the left what we call a piled windrow where the rock is actually on top, and here's what we call a buried windrow. So the difference in the two is that the buried windrow is intended for toe revetment, so protection of the toe, and a piled revetment actually protects the whole slope. So it all depends on where we anticipate the velocities to be along that channel. So here's another picture of them building those. So here's them actually excavating the pilot channel. So on the left is kind of where they get started. They did it two halves. And then on the right there, you can kind of see a good picture kind of looking down the pilot channel. So basically, we got it all the way down to the about the river water elevation. So you can see the water start to percolate up through the sand there on the right side. There's more pictures of the pilot channel here. And so there, we're looking at the outlet of the project on the left side. On the right side, we're looking at the inlet of the project. So this little strip of land here is what we call the plug. So that was excavated down to the ordinary high water mark. And again, until the project got, or the water in the Elkhorn got above that, wasn't going to operate. So this is the Elkhorn River discharges at the Waterloo gauge from April 20th to yesterday, or to May 12th, right? What's today? To today. So as you can see here, and as you all know, it's been raining, and so we got some runoff events here. So the night of April 21st, when I went to bed, it was about 9,000 CFS in the river. And when we got up in the morning, it was about 13,000. So Bob and I from our office hustled out there. And sure enough, the plug at the upstream part of the project had breached, in fact, and water was actually flowing through the channel by the time we got there about 8 o'clock in the morning. So we knew that. So from working backwards, we figured out it was about 10,000 CFS that's required in the Elkhorn for the project to operate there. So when we look at precipitation here, these are just a couple of graphs. This one's from Norfolk. So we obviously had some abnormal. We've had some abnormal precipitation. So the red line at the bottom is the normal graph. The blue for these dates is the highest that we've seen in 2001, and then the lowest is down here. I'm sorry, this kind of brownish is the normal. So as you can see from the green graph here at Norfolk, we've had a very wet year, which is causing those flows there. Same thing here. This is West Point, also in the watershed up near the top of the watershed. And these are some precipitation maps as well. So these are the last 14 days of precipitation, and you can see the color scale on the right there. And then the same color scale there, this is the last 30 days. So it's been a very wet spring, as everybody here knows very well. So this is a picture looking at the channel now, and this is kind of looking down the plug. We're looking downriver along the existing right bank of the river here, and the gray lines are in there just to kind of show you that's kind of the top of the bank that was left. That's in effect what we call the plug there. So the day of the breach, that morning there, this is what it looked like when we were out there on April 21st, looking downstream. As you can see, it opened up and water's actually moving through there. This is what it looked like on the 26th after another runoff event, or after the water had subsided a little bit. We went out there and looked at it, and this is kind of what it looked like. And as you can see, the river had kind of started going through there. This is what it looked like on May 5th after another runoff event here. So water's up above, and as you can see, a lot of the plug is starting to disappear, and the river is actually forming its channel there. This is what the outer bend looked like when we were right before construction here. Before any of this stuff had happened, you can see the grass isn't even up yet. This is what the outer bend looked like the day of the breach. So this water was all moving down the channel here that first day. So this is a little bit of a discussion of what's going on here. So this gives you a little bit of an insight into what the Elkhorn River geology looks like. And what we've got is these are sands that are underlaying a mixture of some silt and some sand. And so when you get down to the pure sand, as you kind of saw in some of those excavation pictures we had of the tree revetments there, what happens is the water goes, once the sand saturates, the sand sloughs, and then eventually the clay falls down on top of it. So that's what we're expecting is going to happen is, as water comes up, eventually the river is just going to keep falling into itself and get wider and wider, wider until it reaches its balance point. So, I don't know, Mike, do you have to hit this is actually an embedded video here. I think if you go to the bottom, kind of hover your mouse on the bottom, I think you can, there's a play button. Hopefully it works. It should be embedded in the PowerPoint. If you go at the bottom, you don't see there it goes. Okay, so pay attention here. So you see the water. You can see where the faster water is moving. But pay attention on the left side of the bank here, and you can kind of see what happens. We stand here and forever and look at these things, and you finally get one on camera, and you're so happy. But this is right up about the plug here, and you'll kind of see what's happening very slowly. And it's kind of one of those, you know, if no one's in the forest, does a tree make a sound? If it falls, it's one of those deals. But right here, it's getting ready. So there you can see how that's working. So that's what's happening right now on both sides of the channel here, is it's just kind of falling into itself. Eventually, the higher velocity is going to be around the outside of the channel. It's going to be more scour. We expect more failure to occur on the outside of the channel there. There's another look at the outer bend on April 26th. You can see the grass is coming up now. I had some sunshine and some rain. The thing's getting wider. This is May 5th. Look at the outer bend. You can see the grass is coming up nice again. there's the outer bend looking down towards the in the middle of the channel, looking back upstream. There's a picture of the inner bend, standing on the inner bend here. So you really can't get to the outer bend now without a boat because it's an island. So you can see even the roots here. Obviously, the trees are gone now, but you can see all the root systems that are still in place here. So that's also going to help probably slow down the project a little bit as well. Here you have a little bit of an anomaly. You got a little bit of a scour hole that formed in the inner bend here. That's just a function of geology and what was there. Probably not as many tree roots, more sand, whatever it is. Director Teaser took this picture here on the inner bend, and I promised I'd throw in the presentation here. So this is actually from the island, right, looking back across the new channel?
Looking from Graham's house.
Okay. So that's actually looking at these. So this is a good view that we didn't have in any of the other pictures, looking back at where we're usually standing, taking pictures from. So as the other day, Bob's out there, and he had an airboat coming up the new channel there. So the project's obviously up and running, and people know it's there. This is the guy probably going there to get some mushrooms on the island. So when we go out there, what we do is we take a little golf laser finder and we stand on one bank, we shoot the other bank so we can get pretty accurate within a yard. And so we're using that to kind of track how wide the channel is forming. So the red now, so remember the inner lines was a 50-foot channel when we started. The red now, so in essence, most of the channels come out about 30 feet. All in all, this is, this from outside line to outside line is 400 feet. So it's actually moved about 30 feet wider than it was with the runoff we've had so far. That concludes the presentation, so if anybody has any questions, I'll be happy to answer them. Hope it didn't take too much time.
Director Jeff. Unfortunately, the house that we were protecting burnt down. Isn't that the house, Graham's house?
He was one of the houses that was on. I mean, the purpose of the project is to protect 240th Street. 240th Street is the only north-south thoroughfare on that side of the things. There are four nice houses in between 240th Street. But, yes, it was one of the houses that burned down. Yeah. But it didn't flood.
Any other questions from us?
Thank you.
All right, moving along to subcommittee reports. What? Not quite yet. Public meeting. Agenda 9. Yep. 9, review of the 2014-15 Integrated Management Plan Annual Report. Paul Woodward and Amy Zoller from the Nebraska Department of Natural Resources.
All right, good evening, directors. We have Amy Zoller here with us tonight. She's an integrated water management analyst with the Nebraska Department of Natural Resources.
Coordinator.
But she's familiar with RIMP as we kind of developed it at the end, put it together, and then has been the primary author on the annual report, which is what we're going to go over tonight. And basically the purpose here is to have a public briefing on what we've done so far on the integrated management plan and give an overview of the annual reports and what's in them. If you remember, the board approved our integrated management plan in August of 2014. The primary purpose of the integrated management plan is to kind of set us a path forward of the ways to manage both surface and groundwater together so that we can protect the existing uses while still having a good game plan to manage any future uses or development as time goes on. There were like four main goals, and there's different objectives for those goals in the plan. And we'll kind of review where we're at with those tonight. An overview of the whole area, the entire district there, and then you can see what we call the IMP area is outlined in red. That's basically anything that drains watershed-wise to the Platte or Elkhorn River. Really, it's a boundary. It just kind of sets a boundary of where we're going to have our control areas. Our plan can actually take effect outside of there as well. So this is a zoom in of that. After we did adopt the plan, both the district and DNR established a limit on the number of acres, of new acres, for irrigation that could occur each year. So we control the area in blue. We could expand 2,500 acres of groundwater irrigation in that area. And DNR controls the area in red, and they can do a third of that, or 834 acres in 1 year, of new surface water irrigation.
And for DNR, for those acres, we set our limit at the beginning of the year. So around December 15th, we're sending out letters to the general manager, gets to Paul or whoever, and whatever you have had at that point for your limits on new groundwater acres, then we set ours at one-third that amount. That's kind of how that works.
Okay.
And that's in our IMP. That's how we set the control up.
And we'll review where that's kind of at with our talk tonight. So the first part of the annual report is to review or collect data, review data you've collected over the year, and some of the monitoring information. So from the NRD's perspective tonight, we're going to talk about what areas have been expanded from irrigated acres, that and surface water, groundwater level measurements, municipal water use. Amy's going to talk about... Go ahead.
I didn't get that. according to the IMP, DNR is responsible to monitor stream gauge measurements, but it's only for the Department of Natural Resources streams or stream gauges. And all of the stream gauges in the area are USGS. But we did include in the report just some like general statistics and summaries of the USGS data. But we're also responsible for monitoring surface water permitting activities. We'll talk about that in just a minute. And then also irrigation water use, whatever data we have from that, we put in the annual reports.
So the first part, the expansion of irrigated acres over the 2 years, we tracked, in this case, we'll have an annual report every year from now on, but since we adopted it near the end of 2014, we're just including both years in this first report, and then you'll see us again about this time next year, about just 2016. So, and combined the 2 years, we've only approved 565 acres of new groundwater irrigation, and that was with 12 different variances over that time.
And it was pretty easy to report on your permitting activities. There were none.
From the surface water irrigation standpoint.
Yeah.
On the groundwater level measurements maps, those are included in the report. I think I'll skip going to them tonight just because of some technical stuff at the PowerPoint. But we did an overview there. There's basically 22 different readings we take both spring and fall, the district does, in our IMP area. And I did kind of a look at the map to see how much they really vary. There's some, on average, most have been sampled for about 15 years, but there's some that have had readings for as long as 37 years. So over that entire course of time in the Elkhorn and Platte Valley, generally things have a standard deviation of about a foot, which means they can go up or down a foot every year, which isn't a ton of fluctuation, but you could catch that. I could go out there and measure them now and get a completely different measurement after the river comes back down several feet. So throughout that year, it can vary quite a bit too.
And so what we do for surface water irrigation use is we've established a voluntary water use reporting system. And we do that, we focus those efforts on anyone or any NRD who has a voluntary IMP. And so what we did was we sent out invitations via postcards. You have about 49 or 50 surface water permits, and we got 12 responses back in 2012, and we got 7 responses back in 2015. And it's in the report, I summarize kind of what those are and what people are doing out there. But we also get some other interesting information that I think is interesting. Pretty much everyone who we surveyed is using some sort of tillage conservation practice. 58% of the crops were irrigated, and that accounted for about 1,200 acres. And if we look at the total reported acres, they were about 60-40 corn and soybeans. But when you look at irrigated acres, it was about 70% and 30% corn and soybean. Oh, okay. And we also have our field staff go out and check the surface water pump sites. And so they're out there every year doing this. The right side shows a map of kind of some of the data that they've collected. And for the most part, most of those sites aren't set up for irrigation when they're out there. But I think it was like nine pumps were set up to irrigate in 2014, and seven pumps were set up to irrigate in 2015. In the course of the 2 years, they visited most of the surface water sites twice, and they've only missed, I think we were looking at the data today, they've only missed like one in that whole period. So they're out there looking at the sites and collecting data on what's going on with the surface water.
You can see the different permits on the map there. For municipal water use, we both kind of report a little bit on this, and it is a little bit different in the reports, is what you can tell. DNR actually issues the different municipalities permits, and so they're getting information back on those permits, which actually includes water being pumped from both RNRD, Lower Platte South, Lower Platte North, and depends. The well field covers that entire area. For our reporting on our side of the river, we did just ask for those wells that are within our district, within our IMP area. And you can see the totals there is the total amount of acre feet pumped in each year. About the only deviation is the increase that, and these are just the rivers that are in the middle, or the wells that are in the middle of the river, and they added the third one, and it came online in 2015, so you see the difference in the amount of pumpage they were able to have during that year. Now we're just going to go over kind of jointly where we're at with our different actions. So in goal one is kind of to use what policies and practices we currently have to maintain the status quo. How do we keep the existing uses protected and also allow wisely for future development? So what we're doing there is we're actively pursuing a groundwater management plan update, which you're familiar with. Ongoing aquifer studies are required as part of the IMP. So we got some of the data from NRA there. And then the USGS study we'll be talking about tonight is part of the aquifer study that is part of our IMP. Amy, on NRA, you might want to mention NDNR was a big player in us getting all that data, providing as much as $500,000 to do that. And I think you're right now reviewing the data for use in the model.
Yeah. That's in a different slide.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Continue with the Lower Platte weed management work. Just FYI there is we are accepting bids now during this month for the weed management spraying. So those are out there. But we continue to work on that. And then conjunctive management project studies. One thing I'll highlight there, which you'll see in the future here, is a joint, in addition to the Lower Platte Basin Plan that's being put together here, there is a consortium, that's what we're calling it, of agencies with the three Lower Platte NRDs, MUD, and Lincoln Water are looking at a drought mitigation study. So how do we take what we know from the Lower Platte Basin Plan and directly apply it to what we're going to do during times of really low flow in the Platte River. Goal two, this is a lot of where the data collection and monitoring you've already heard about goes into. So this just outlines kind of what we've done as part of that. One thing the district is working on, in addition to calculating where we've had those variances, where we've expanded, we don't really have a good handle on where all the irrigated acres currently are in that area anyway. So we have done mapping so far to get us a better handle on that, just looking at where center pivots are at, where wells are at. We're going to go back out to those landowners and work with them to have them say yes or no, that looks about right with the amount of irrigated acres I have, and that'll be our baseline. Hopefully we don't have to repeat that process for as many acres ever over again. We can just say, what are we adding? What are we subtracting? So that'll kind of work. I've talked about the groundwater level maps. The NRA report, this is probably where you want to add that in, but the NRA did complete those flights that we talked about, and now we're talking about new flights tonight, so I think you kind of know where that's at. Water balance data, what I want to report on there is that all this data collected, we're going to do something with it. So we're going to be bringing it back, data from InSight, which Amy will talk about, and then data about water uses and water supplies and how they kind of, what is our bank account? And as we gather more data over the next couple of years, we'll be able to run that calculation. We'll be able to see where is our bank account at and how are we doing. So it's not something we currently have yet tonight, but we're working on doing that. And then you saw the municipal water use data.
Okay. So as Paul was saying, DNR contributed a fair amount of money to NRA in 2014, and that was to acquire this data, the last set of data rounds that was acquired. And what we're really interested in is to see if we can use that data in our groundwater models. We currently are developing two groundwater models for the Lower Platte Missouri Tribes Basins, and they are divided into two areas. The map on the right is showing those areas. We have an upper Lower Platte Missouri Tribes model that's in blue, and then we have a lower Nemaha model. We've put in the boundary of the IMP, just for reference there, that's in the tan. The blue area, that model is currently in calibration phase, so it's almost completed. And then we are just starting development of that Nemaha model. But we want to look at the NRA data and how that could be used, like the base of aquifer and the aquifer thickness in our groundwater models, to see if that helps us to better define or refine hydrologically connected areas.
Yeah, so the first map you kind of saw where we had the blue area of groundwater management control, that could change based on what the models tell us a little bit. Goal three is how we take everything that we're learning and go out and educate the public, and part of the meeting tonight is to bring that out. You know most of the ways the NRD works with the newsletter. We will try to be active with the World of Water public event here, and then the urban stormwater education, and really groundwater surface water interaction is something that's at least brought up by our education staff every time they do a school visit or have visitors out here, at least for the most part. It's not 100% of the time. The kids are really like the animals a lot. But but water may be second. I don't know. Go ahead.
So the annual reviews kind of give us an opportunity to highlight what we do in our division for public outreach and the department as a whole. So during the review period, we created a 30-minute documentary for the NET program called Water Today and Water Tomorrow. That's on our website. It's pretty cool. It shows kind of what DNR does. We also attended several state events, Husker Harvest Days, Nebraska State Fair, and then the Women in Ag Conference. And we're making those, pretty much doing those annually now. We've incorporated that into our public outreach program. And then finally, we've put a lot of effort into our InSight website, and that is a portal. Here's a screenshot of it. For all of our water use and water supply data, that we use, and some of our outputs from our modeling go into this, and we can manipulate that data and perform calculations on it to try to look at the overall water balance through time. And then we have a couple scenarios where we're looking at long-term water balance and also projected water balance. And so, like I said, this is just a screenshot of the front page. We are redeveloping, so it's going to look a little different. It won't have so many words. And right now, InSight doesn't cover the whole state, and so we're also working to expand that area to the whole state. But it has different tabs to look at water use data, water demand, and then it's all kind of boiled down to the balance, which I'm showing here for the Lower Platte South Basin, and over time, kind of what we would expect to see on a regional sense. We don't have it refined to the scale of the IMP area or even to the NRD at this point. You can kind of see where the NRD and the IMP are in this map, but really you have two sub-basins that intersect the IMP area. It's the green Elkhorn and the Lower Platte South Purple area.
Finally, goal forward. The last goal is to work collectively and cooperatively with other agencies within our entire Lower Platte Basin. Obviously, we can't fix any problem alone. So mentioned there the coalition meetings, participating in this Lower Platte River Consortium, which I mentioned, which includes the two Lincoln and Omaha municipalities. And then looking at funding opportunities, actually in what you're reviewing tonight, the district was awarded over $375,000 to do some of this grants and studies as we move forward. Why do we do the annual reviews and kind of what's the purpose of looking at this? Well, I know you've heard lots of times with the different plans, we don't want them to be stagnant. We don't want them to sit on a shelf. With this one, there's not a required, you know, that we don't have to take a whole fresh look at it every 5 years or something. But so what we're doing is basically going through and seeing what's working, what's not. Can we modify it a little bit? And the plan does have to be jointly implemented by both DNR and us. So, you know, we're cooperatively working together on making sure it works. And then every time we do make some progress, we definitely want to make sure everybody knows about it. So, looking at the next couple of years, at least what we hope to accomplish over that time frame, there's a lot on that slide, but our basic ones are continue the work that we've got going on. So the groundwater management plan update will help us refine some things. It'll help make our groundwater management plan match some of the things the IMP says, but it also helped bring some new information to light, I think. And you see the other studies in there. I won't get into too much more. What else?
Yeah, and this is something that we specified in our IMP that we do jointly identify our next actions at our annual review meetings and coordination meetings, that we jointly determine what our actions will be for the next 2 years. And so this was done, together. But kind of like what Paul was saying, like, our approach is to keep doing what we're doing. We're busy. We're looking hard at these issues and water balance as a whole, and trying to get as much data together as we can. And so we want to keep on that track. We really appreciate the relationships with the NRDs that we're building through the IMP process. That's invaluable to work together to manage water in that capacity. The one that I will bring up is that would be new. Is that we're hoping to participate with your NRD in one public education event. We're going to put it at once every 2 years as a start. So we want to do that with all of the NRDs that we have voluntary IMPs with, and so we want to get that going.
With that, as a public meeting, we'd be happy to answer any questions you may have, and then offered it to the general public.
Thanks, Paul.
Yep.
Judge Conley?
I have a question as to the data that you've gotten back from the NRA flights. How the Lower Platte Valley here has been punched so full of holes, it's like Swiss cheese from all the test drillings over the years that have been going on down here. How has that correlated with the test drilling?
They have what's that?
Don't they calibrate it to the test holes?
Yeah, they do. So they did match it up very well. So it was the line that they did fly was actually on a geologic profile that UNL had already looked at. So they had taken a lot of the test hole data and put it into what they saw. And what they saw from the results of the AM flight matched that profile very well. And then there are, of course, additional holes that they did look at to make sure that weren't used in that other profile to just check, kind of a secondary check to make sure everything was accurate. And it's giving us a real good idea of where the bottom of the aquifer might be, you know, where you're kind of, it doesn't show you where the water starts, but it shows you the bottom and you kind of get an idea of what you have from there.
So it's calibrating pretty well then?
It is calibrated pretty well.
Thank you. Dr. Jeff?
I got numerous questions, but I'm going to start out with one that isn't addressed in here. Since agriculture has a higher priority over industrial use, shut off irrigation or limit irrigation, how are those farmers going to be compensated for the use of the water they're denied?
If that's not something you can answer,
no.
That's not part of an integrated management plan. That's another
issue that happened.
That's a major part of an integrated management plan.
Compensation is not part of it.
Okay, on page 4 of the draft here, is that 5,000 acres a year that can be, or is it 5,000 in total that can be expanded?
It's 2,500 per year.
2,500, okay.
Yeah.
Page 5, it says, under water banking, the PAPI-NRD does not currently operate a water banking. Well, I know that's a correct statement, but we have proposed a water banking project on the Bell Creek. Why wasn't that a proposal written in here?
We haven't proposed a water banking project on the Bell
Creek. Again, misinformation. Bell Creek is not a part of the integrated management plan. As written, it's a plan. If you can find Bell Creek in the integrated management plan that's in front of you, it's news to us.
The word was taken out. It is an augmentation project, which was the term that was used up in the NRD a couple weeks ago.
Okay. Well, I don't know what they said up there, but it's not a part of our plan.
Well,
as written and adopted by the board.
They're a part of integrated conjunctive use plans. Now, I tried 2 years ago to make sure that that term dam wasn't a conjunctive use, but I failed in that. Okay. All right, let me keep going here. Page 2 of this green.
Yeah, that PDF.
It's under development of groundwater management plans and required by law. There's university has studies out there that where there's high nitrates and you're getting uranium contamination with that. What is the plans to do something about that?
That's what we're reviewing in our that's what that document is suggesting. What we look at in our groundwater management plan update.
Thank you.
Yeah, so integrated management plans are DNR doesn't have authority over water quality.
Okay.
That would be DEQ on the state level. So the integrated management plan addresses water quantity, Yeah, so since we're joint partners on the plan, that's not addressed in the integrated management plan.
So is DEQ going to get involved in that some way?
DEQ is involved in our groundwater management plan update.
Okay. On the same page, it says proposed water conservation and supply augmentation projects for the district. Can you tell me what are all the possible augmentation projects are, since you wrote it in here?
Yeah, we can zoom up to that. What page is that?
Page 2.
Okay.
Again, you use the term augmentation programs.
If this is something you're looking for all of the possible projects, is it something that staff can get you at a later date?
No, keep going down. It's part of the report all here.
Well, it's very simple. Is dams going to be a project that could be possibly an augmentation project? Yes or no?
Well, I would say yes.
Okay,
Can we give a 30,000-foot view of this? This is the beauty of the NRD system. I was just in Alabama for a whole week with some folks from Texas and California. And the lady from Houston was dealing with too much water every year for the last 5 years, and nothing can get done. The gentleman from California has to take a shower with a bucket and then dump that into the toilet to flush it because he's only living off 30% of his water allocation. So here we sit in the middle of Nebraska, and they say, how is everything there? And we say, this is a system we have, and we have it pretty good right now. But that will change. We will no doubt have a drought. And we will. How long that is, no one knows. And so how much we want to be an island, if you're a political subdivision or an individual or whatever, water knows no boundaries. Drought knows no boundaries. So you have to take advantage of the system you have, and we have a beautiful system to work hand-in-hand with the state and the community and all of our stakeholders across a full basin. And a full basin doesn't care what county line or what city line is in it. So you work together to help mitigate those things in the future. Or if you don't, you suffer the consequences. And so in California, they have hundreds of thousands of acres of the most productive agricultural land laying fallow because they have no water to irrigate. Nebraska, guess what? We are the number one irrigated acre or state. Number one in agriculture. So don't you think that that is important, that you look at all the options and, you know, you have these people all fired up around various parts of the district because a study was done. It's our duty to study everything. You can't eliminate one thing just because it's not politically expedient. You have to look at all the options. Is it dams? Is it other things that are happening out west? We rely on Oglala. We rely on the aquifer. We rely on all the water that comes down the Platte. We rely on the water in the Missouri. It's all part of a system. And no matter how much you want to deny geography or anyone else, you can't. It's just the way the land lays. So we either work cooperatively together and we plan together, or we squabble and we end up taking showers with a bucket to flush your toilet, or we let hundreds of thousands or million acres of prime farm ground lay fallow because we don't have the water to irrigate it. So there's your choices.
Mr. Winkler, something in California 3,000 miles away, if not more, over mountain ranges, I don't think what happens there affects what we do here.
Well, it does, because I guarantee you, with hundreds or millions of Californians without water, what do you think eventually they will have to do?
Oh, so you're making the allegations that
Director Japp, Director Japp.
What if those people have to move?
We're not going to argue over this. You can have your opinions. You cannot have your own facts. Please, if you have another question, ask it. Otherwise, we'll move on.
I was asking questions to the director.
And you got a few answers. If you have another question, please ask it, or we'll move on.
Still on the same page. Page two. The relative economic value difference of groundwater process to the existing. How are you determining those values of the economic values of groundwater?
It's all part of the upcoming plan. This is a suggested list of things to look at in the plan.
So at some point in time, will we get data?
Sure, as we finish the plan, we'll try to do that.
Well, this is being done annually, isn't it?
That's the IMP. We're talking about the groundwater management plan.
Okay. And again, since water is a commodity, the value of that changes depending on the circumstances.
I totally agree with that. I would like to know what that information is currently.
We don't have that right now.
Again, it says page two, local funding opportunities. You quote a state statute that it's 3 cents per hundred. I thought it was one.
This is the information provided to us from Olson Associates as part of their review of what we would need going into our groundwater management plan.
All right, and I'll check on that once I get home. So, page one, identify opportunities and protocols. One, two, three, paragraph four, it's a statement in there. It says downstream demand in many times perceived to be non-consumptive, but to the upstream user areas where water is discharged from, it is expected to be 100% consumptive. Why is the downstream users not being charged for the water?
Or are they not being charged for the water?
Well, you're not considering the downstreams a non-consumptive use. So what, in this case, the non-consumptive use would be OP or MUD in the Lincoln water fields. Why isn't their water being consumed as considered a consumptive use? But the upstream agriculture users are.
Well, that's just in the calculations of how you determine the balance of water from an upstream source and how it's being used in the current area.
Okay. Also, last question, paragraph 2. It says, understand the social and economic value of the various types of consumption along the degree in which various types of consumptions are occurring. How are you going to economically determine those values?
And that goes back to the last question. I think we're still working on it. So,
so before we approve this draft, I would hope that I'd get answers to it.
Well, it's already been approved. This is just an update. You've approved it in 2014. And we can provide that. That anyone in the public would like it, we'll send it to you. And you can see for yourself what's in it.
I thought it said on my cover here, it says this is a draft of April 16. So we'll have to approve a new one?
No.
This is just the annual report. It's draft until following the public meeting.
Just post that on the site?
Yeah, we'll post on the site.
Any further
questions from directors? Dr. Bond.
Just three quick points. You guys mentioned the USGS wells. Kind of skipped over that. Just skip past that a little bit. Are you sharing data with them? Do we have a data share agreement there?
USGS
is
wells,
there data that
pages?
They have what? That you're... Yeah.
Actually, we had the one discussion about the USGS aquifer study, but I think what Amy was reporting on was the USGS stream gauges, and those are... funded by cooperators too. In this case, a lot of our Platte River ones are actually cost shared on by MUD, not through us, but MUD cost shares with USGS to keep those operating.
That data is incorporated in our, or will be incorporated in our.
That data is brought in.
It's available.
There's two reports. So DNR, this is our report, and we just put that on our website. So basically. We reported on our activities, and Bob reported on.
We'll provide a link to their report as well.
Thank you.
Yep.
Any further questions from directors? Any questions from the public? I guess please come forward if you could. State your name and address for the record. Good evening.
Excuse me. You're going to have to pardon me. I have kind of a bad cold, so... Carl Lorenzen, Lorenzen, 953 Westridge Drive, Blair, Nebraska. I'm the current chairman of the Washington County Board of Supervisors, and John and I have had some communication, and I want to say publicly I thank you for your answers that you've given me, and that the board wants to keep that dialogue open. Totally. Okay. The reason I'm here is because the IMP of the Lower Elkhorn does indicate a proposed dam on their dam project list on the Bell Creek. And, of course, that where the dam is located is in the Papio NRD. So that's why we have some concern about it. And Steve Kruger, one of our board members, was at the Lower Elkhorn meeting 2 weeks ago, and we presented a letter that I signed that was voted on by the board that we would express our opposition to that particular dam. Right. John, you had indicated that you fully expect that to be removed from the Lower Elkhorn.
Well, I can't...
You can't speak for them. Right.
But I can say that, obviously, I provided you with the IMP that was adopted in 2014.
Correct.
And Bell Creek is not in there. And obviously, when we had a stakeholders meeting of folks from all over the district, and Mr. Ray and Tana Wirtz and some other folks... We sat on that committee, and they were adamant, and they personally visited with me over several conversations to say, we really don't want this. This is not something that we want in Washington County.
Okay.
And so it was removed, and that's what was adopted. And what I tried to express earlier when addressing Mr. Japp was, again, that's part of our goals is to study and look and see where we can cooperate and see what techniques and projects or programs that may or may not work. And so that's what that was. It wasn't, I guarantee you, the people of Washington County are not going to go to bed one night and then wake up in the morning with a dam on Bell Creek.
Well, we understand that.
Okay, so that's not going to happen. And I think, and I appreciate working with you, and I talked to Mr. Kruger on the phone too. That is important that we talk, because some things get said out of context, or there may be some pandering involved, and so it's very important that we communicate and try to give each other accurate information. So everything I've provided to you is accurate, and if you have any questions or need anything, you know where to reach me.
No, I don't think I have any questions. I just want to publicly state, you know, our opposition of any proposed dam on the Bell Creek, and you have that. You have the letter that I sent to you.
Your letter is in the board's packet in the general manager's report, and so everyone has
it. But I just wanted to publicly state that, so I appreciate the indulgence, and thank you. Let's keep the dialogue open. Okay? Thank you, John.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman.
Yes,
Mr. Redson.
Yes.
By the way, thank you for coming down here and meeting us directly. We've got a history with misinformation given to the Washington County supervisors. It's done purposely to misinform you folks. So I appreciate you coming around, keeping the dialogue open. It's unfortunate that you expend energy, including legal counsel, to write stupid letters to us that we have to write a stupid letter back because someone's trying to make a cause that's unwarranted. So I do really appreciate from this majority of the board that you come down and open up the dialogue and keep it
open. Well, I don't know, Mr. Thompson, if I correctly agree with your statement that, you know, that we were misinformed. I think what we do as a board is we don't just accept information we get at face value. That's why I questioned Mr. Winkler also. What we do is we look at the information we receive and we take that to heart. And we do our research, and that's why we wrote this simple letter just to state our opposition to any proposed dam. We're not accusing anyone of anything. What we're saying is that we just want everything to be in the open, and that's why we're keeping open dialogue with the FAPIO board.
I've been dealing with the Washington County Board since I've been on this board, and there's a lot of misinformation given to you folks, and we have to point counterpart, unfortunately. So I really do appreciate you keeping a direct dialogue, not believing the crap that you get from a certain director. Thank you.
Well, we appreciate that, but we'll do our own purging and decide what we need to do. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Director.
Yeah, I guess I'm a little confused and curious about why the dam is in our area is part of another NRD's plan. Why would they even mention it? What's going on there? I mean, that seems...
It's not a plan. It was a study. And it was, I believe, and I haven't even read it yet, it was a issue on retiming of water to make sure that you've got an ample supply in the Platte River for the well fields.
So it was their study?
It was their study.
That they said, oh, hey, maybe we might want to plant a dam, and that dam would be in our NRD just because they've got to look at a 30,000 feet view as well.
As I said,
you have to look at everything. That or started to create the story that we were in cahoots with them.
Well, and we participated, and so did Lower Platte South, I believe, or North, one of the two. Oh, all three of us, actually. So the other NRDs kicked in. You know, again, we're looking at a basin, no political boundaries. And so that's what they did. They looked at the basin. Is it in the Papios? Is it in Lower Platte North? Is it in our district? And so that's one of the goals, or two of the goals. One, work together and work with to look at what is possible. What can we do? Because we may have a conversation one year, we don't have any water. What are we going to do? So it was in a plan and it was discussed. Well, then all of a sudden, through various maturations, it became some conspiracy to build a dam that no one knew about. Again, totally inaccurate, and you have to look at all options. You can't just say, well, you know, this area really doesn't want to be involved, so we're just going to walk. We can't include them. No, that's poor planning. You just can't eliminate something because it's a political decision. And when the engineers looked at the study, engineers don't consider politics. What works with the geography, what works with the hydraulics, what works with the hydrology, then they have a plan. Then it's up to you guys as board members saying, okay, of all those options, what can we fund, what's politically palpable, and what can get accomplished? The engineers don't care, but that's why they bring it to us, and so they should look at everything. And that's why I think some of the confusion occurred. The engineers aren't political people, so they look at all the data.
Director Jack.
When did this board approve a study with Olson and Associates to do a study?
Actually, I'm going to have to put a hold on that because it's open to the public.
Okay, that's fine.
I have a question.
haven't been here for a while, so better speak.
Give me Sean.
You know, it's still around. This is Sean Malatz, 10404 North 132nd Street. I'd like to get a little more clarification on a couple of statements that Paul Woodward had made during his presentation. One was that he noted that the plan could go outside the IMP area. I wish he'd kind of expand on that, because it was my understanding that it wasn't, that this was the boundaries and they were staying within it. Number two, I'd like a better understanding of the number of irrigators that are in this area, because they had said there were only 7 or 9 that reported, and I'd be curious about the study, you know, and how it worked with that ratio. Couple other quick comments, a little bit off the subject, but while I'm up here, I'd like to ask for a copy of the FIRA report that was in that was referred to in the World Herald last week. If I can get a copy of that, I'm giving you my written request information.
There's no model or anything, but we'll give you the maps.
And the information that was used for the reporter to report on, that would be appreciated.
It's available. I think it's on the website. In fact, it's on our website. But if not, we'll get
I
it to
look
you.
For it and I couldn't
okay,
find
we'll
it.
We'll send it to you.
And the other thing, just kind of a general comment, you had said that you were aware of the study up in
yes.
Norfolk?
Yeah. And
because
I
earlier you had said you weren't aware of that.
No, I haven't read it.
Damn.
I haven't read the study, but we were aware of the study because, as I said, one of the goals or two of the goals in the IMP is to work throughout the basin.
Well, I understand okay, that, so, but I think there was some confusion
no,
on your
no,
statements.
No
they kind of were a little bit on my
it.
Part.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I'll clarify. I haven't read the report.
You haven't
I was
read
aware
it,
of
but
the
But you
report.
Were aware of that. Structure potentially
yes, yes.
going into Washington
yes.
County. Okay.
And that's
Thank you.
That's yeah, and there's no denying that. But the issue with the thank you, Sean. With the contribution from Lower Platte South, Lower Platte North, and the Papio was it was a $5,000 contribution from each, and then Lower Elkhorn had the additional. And so there's no board action needed to participate. And so we all contributed and say, hey, let's see what this comes up with. And so that was the study.
So you just took it up on your own self to go make a study that could propose.
Let me before you go off and say something that's not correct. I didn't go off on my own. We follow the board's policies and procedures for entering into agreements at certain dollar amounts. So that's a board policy, and that's the authority the majority of the board gives to me to do those types of things. So I wasn't going off on my own on anything. I was following board policy and procedures. Similar to the case where you made the accusation that I bought land and sold land for $1. And so obviously that is misinformation again, and I'm glad people can hear this, because if anybody goes look at a warranty deed on any purchase throughout the country, there's either $1 or $10 or a nominal fee listed. And ask any real estate person, any appraiser, anybody. And that's what occurs. So, again, no one went on their own. No one violated any policies. We followed the policies as we always do.
So, again, if something is important.
Director Japp. One moment. Paul, would you be able to answer Sean's questions this evening, or is that something, Sean, would you be okay if Paul got those to you at a later date? Okay.
Well, I'd like to hear them.
Okay.
Well, I think I can.
Okay, the first question about the plan working outside the IMP area, I was just referencing to going to the second map there, in which the control area is confined to that location. Right now the policies that are stated in the plan are just for that IMP area, and any areas tributary to it. Then the second question, the number of irrigators is, so, that was a report on the, those are the people that are out there, that have surface water irrigation. And Amy said they sent a postcard to each of those, to all of them, and seeing what responses they got, and they only got 7 to 9 responses over the course there.
Yeah.
So this is just the surface water irrigators. There are 50. And then And then when we talk about groundwater irrigation, we are still compiling the certified irrigated acres for that. So we don't really have a good total on number of irrigated farm fields out there in total from groundwater.
So that's just the surface water ones that thus far you have getting groundwater.
Yeah. So what I reported on was just the surface water acres. It's just a program that we've enacted where we send out postcards to everybody that has a surface water permit and just ask what they're irrigating, what crops are they irrigating, and how many acres. So it's basically turns out to be kind of a sample of the whole population. But we do that every year now. So in the voluntary IMP areas.
Will they be testing the ground?
Testing the groundwater?
Surface water test.
Oh, they're not really tests. They're just we're just trying to get information from surface water irrigators. So it's voluntary water use reporting. And no, we don't have authority over groundwater. So that would be the NRD.
All right. Any further questions from the public? Good evening. If you could, please state your name and address for the record.
Okay. Thank you. Hi, my name is Steve Kruger, K-R-U-G-E-R. I live at 14744 County Road 7, Arlington, Nebraska. I'm a District 6 supervisor for Washington County. The IMP is in my district. Would you just scroll that map down just a little bit, please, what you got there? No, the other way.
All the way.
Yeah. So as you can see, while it is in Western Washington County, that's the Dodge County line. I believe that red line on the left, is that correct? Mm-hmm. That's Dodge County line?
No. Paul?
Yes, that would be the Dodge County.
Okay. Right. And so the little red squiggly line on the right, that's just the watershed. Probably that would include, even though the name is in there, that is the Bell Creek, correct? That's watershed of the Bell Creek, correct?
I believe that. Is that the Papillion Creek watershed boundary? Yes.
Yeah, of the Bell Creek, correct.
Yes.
So I guess my question I have here is that you guys have said that you helped pay for this study. Is that study ever going to be looked at by the entire board?
I mean, we can provide it. In fact, I just got it in the mail today, so we'll be more than happy to provide every board member with it that wants to look at it.
Okay.
I think it's so premature, the study, that I don't know how much data or, you know, what Lower Elkhorn is going to do with it, but... we share it with – it's public information. We'll share it with everybody.
Well, I understand that. It's been on the website for the last month and a half. I guess if you're going to pay for something, I just wonder why you haven't been looking at it. So that's
I personally just haven't had the time myself to look at it. I'm sure my staff has looked at it. I, again, just personally haven't had a chance to look at it. So
I just
– I have other things that have popped up in the
– Yeah, and I'm not – and I appreciate you, again, your correspondence with me, Mr. Winkler. And I just want to say that Mr. Winkler has called me several times. I've talked to him, too. I'm not here to be an adversary or anything like that. I'm just wondering, if you're paying for a study, when would this board actually take a look at that study? And is there – would there be action ever taken on that study? Or you just say, thank you for the study, and we're moving on?
Well, I mean, we would look at the study and look at the numbers and see what the results were and data were. And I don't think there's anything for us to take action on because there isn't any proposal to do anything. It simply was, what's the data and what's the environment look like? It's like situational awareness. You want to know what's going on around you before you can make decisions on what's the best course of action. So there's nothing tied to the study that would require an action by a board. Now, if a project somehow generated from that or some other type of program or something we needed to do, then it would come before the board, and that study would provide the information and the data and the background to make a decision if that project or program is wise. That's why you do studies. I mean, it gives you the foundation to build if you're trying to address something.
Yeah,
so
and
that's
I have,
all that is.
I have no problem with studying things. I think it's important to study things and get research and everything like that. However, you know, you go to the Lower Elkhorn Natural Resource District, now they're starting to maybe pick out a certain and that's not you guys, but that's
right.
Them starting to look at a certain dam site or area up there. And that's fine.
Right.
I guess the concern that we had in my district and in the Papillion district is that all of a sudden Lower Elkhorn Natural Resource District does a study of the Bell Creek, which isn't in their district, which you guys paid for.
Right.
We weren't aware of it.
Right.
You know, with the adversarial concerns before, it would appear to me that somewhere someone should have said, hey, by the way, this is just a study. you got the word to the Board of Supervisors, something like that, that we're participating in. There, you know, this is just a study. We have no plans with this. It may have helped out the communication lines along the way. If you're going to do more studies, right. If another Elkhorn district, or natural resource district, is going to do a study in the Papio, to inform the people in that area that, hey, there is a study being done by this, and we are helping to pay for that.
Well, I agree, and we will do a better job of that.
Okay, thank you.
To piggyback off of that, maybe the folks in the Lower Elkhorn NRD in that area don't know about the contentious relationship between this NRD and Washington County. Maybe it should be floated to them. Hey, it's great that we studied it or you studied it and it needs to be part of the study. But just know, don't think that we can just move ahead with something like that very easily so they don't start propagating a path forward that may not exist.
Right. Well, and I have talked to the manager up there, too, and he's saying the same thing. And I'm taking everybody at their word that it's just a study out there, and we all have to start with study somewhere. It's just like if I take a trip, I have to have a map to go somewhere.
Right, exactly.
But, you know, eventually I'm going to use that map, and that's our concern. Eventually the study may be used. Maybe not in my lifetime, but, you know, we just need to be abreast of what's going on.
Right.
So I appreciate that.
And I agree. And I thank you for coming, and I thank my conversation with you. I really appreciate that because it was, you know, very frank and open and – So
right.
Thanks.
Thank you, Steve. Director Jabs, do you have a question?
Yes. Since the Lower Platte South and according to you, Lower Platte North both were involved in the study, it sure seems funny that there was no proposed dams in those two NRDs. How did they get out of the study?
I did conduct the study, and I can't speak for them. You'll have to go to their board meetings.
All right, any further questions from the public on this particular item? And then back to directors. Director Frost.
Paul, I got one quick question for you. You said, I think you stated that you didn't know how many irrigated acres there were other than the groundwater?
No, the surface water is what we currently have the best figures for because they're permitted.
But you don't know the groundwater?
That's correct.
Why don't you go to the FSA office? They know exactly how many acres are irrigated and non-irrigated.
In the past, FSA hasn't released that information because of privacy rules and regulations.
And I think they still adhere to that decision.
Right, yeah.
They don't release the data.
However, you can go to the county assessor and get those numbers.
And that's where we've started from, and then we've actually been building off of that to just check it against aerial photography and stuff. Mm-hmm. So.
Any further questions from directors? Director Bond.
I just want to make a statement, and I just want to appreciate our staff for being so responsive to our constituents. We're constantly monitoring our staff. We're constantly involved in their activities, but not so much to impede the work that they do. They're very responsive to my constituents, at least. I'm going to speak for my own sub-district. Just because a dam hasn't been proposed probably means because none of us have proposed. We're looking at the data, gather the data so that we have it available for future plans should an extended drought occur. I think it's wise to do that pre-planning. Creeks don't just start and end in one municipality. They start in one county, cross county lines. Multiple municipalities are involved in managing that creek, and it might terminate in another NRD like ours. So working together is critical. Interlocal agreements are a valuable form of a governmental tool. And so I just appreciate the communication that we can have. Carl, you and I have had coffee in the past, so we know each other. Feel free to reach out anytime to any of the board members here. And my other two comments that I was going to make with Paul is during these stakeholder meetings at both entities, I've attended a lot of them. One thing that I've noticed is we are a little heavy on municipal attendance there. So I would like to see a little bit more outreach going forward from our board and from any other interlocal agreement participant that we have to reach out to commercial and agricultural interests to make sure that we do have a little bit more balance there. And then also on our education outreach, especially in the World Water event, specifically because it's held here in Millard, I'd like to see us reach out to the Millard STEM program. All those kids will be studying agricultural and earth history and things like that, third through sixth grade right here at Sandoz. And then in Bellevue, the Fairview and Two Springs Elementaries will be specifically studying these topics. So I'd like to see our organizations reach out to those. Thank you.
I just had one quick comment. The Lower Elkhorn voluntary IMP, that is not has not been adopted yet. That's in progress.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
And thanks for the opportunity to work with your energy.
All right, moving right along. Agenda item number 10, subcommittee report. 10A, the ad hoc consultant selection subcommittee for the West Papio Trail, Giles Road to Millard, Director Patrick Bonnet.
Our ad hoc selection subcommittee has met and selected three firms to be interviewed, and that interview will take place on June 2nd right here at this facility.
Correction. I believe it says four.
Yes.
It's four.
Read that?
Yes.
Okay. Recommendation that Big Muddy Workshop, JEO Consulting Group, Earhart Griffin and Associates, Bells Burkholt and Ulevig and HGM Associates be interviewed by the subcommittee in the order as presented, again on June 2nd, beginning at 6 p.m.
We have a motion on the table. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak to this item? Staff or directors? Seeing none, roll call on the motion.
Ross.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Lanky.
Yes.
Caesar.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Poodle.
Yes.
Bonnet.
Yes.
Fred Conley.
Aye.
John Conley.
Yes.
And Chairperson.
Yes. Thank you, Director Bonnet. Moving on to 10B, Programs, Projects, and Operations Subcommittee, Director Jim Thompson.
Be resolved, minutes of May 9, 2016, meeting of Programs, Projects, and Operations Committee, accepted and incorporated these minutes the following recommendations of the subcommittee are hereby adopted and approved. Item 1, Contract for Aerial Electromagnetic Survey in Southwest Sarpy County and Aqua Geo Framework, Water Sustainability Grant Award, Professional Service Agreement with Aqua Geo Frameworks, LLC, NRA account. 0105191 4195 to exceed 110% of budget. Recommendation: General Manager be authorized to issue the grant award in amount for the Water Sustainability Fund in the amount of $240,000. And district waive the consultant selection process policy number 15.2. And the General Manager be authorized to execute a professional service agreement with Aqua Geo Frameworks LLC in the amount of $400,000 in account number 0105191 4195 NRA. Contribution reimbursements cost share to be allowed to exceed 110% of the budget amount for all the AEM survey of the Southwestern Sarpy County Dakota Aquifer Mapping Project, subject to changes deemed necessary by the general manager and approved as to form by district legal counsel, and the committee hereby approves.
We have a motion on the table. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak to this item? Staff or directors? Seeing none, roll call on the motion.
Yeah.
Yes.
Leahy.
Yes.
Caesar.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Poodle.
Yes.
Bonnet.
Yes.
Fred Conley.
Aye.
John Conley.
Yes.
Ross.
Same.
And Chairperson.
Yes.
981.
And 2, Platt and Elkhorn River Integrated Water Monitoring Project. A, DNR, IDEP, and Water Sustainability Grant Fund Awards, joint funding agreement with the USGS, interlocal agreement with Lower Platte North NRD. Recommendation: General Manager be authorized to execute grant awards for the NDNR Insight Data Management Program Enhancement Program. Funding in the amount of $72,000, Water Sustainability Fund in the amount of $64,200. Execute a joint funding agreement with the US Geological Survey for district. Total cost of district $175,500. Executing an interlocal agreement with the Lower Platte North NRD for the cost share of up to $21,400 for the Platte and Elkhorn River Integrated Water Management Water Monitoring Project, subject to changes deemed necessary by general manager and approved as formed by legal counsel. Committee so approved.
Once again, I have a motion on the table. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak to this item? Staff or directors? Director Lee.
I'm just a little confused on this one. I remember when this came up and we approved it, and there was a little bit of discussion about the cost then. So I guess my question is, if we approved it and we had a set cost, and then we go and we get awarded a grant, wouldn't our costs be reduced? But it doesn't seem like that's what it's saying, I guess.
The previous actions by the board was to just approve the submittal of the grants and to say that if we did get the grants, we would move forward with entering into the agreement with USGS and the interlocal agreement with Lower Platte North. So that's why we're back here today to finish it off.
Right. So those numbers were contingent upon getting a grant.
Gotcha.
Any further questions from directors?
We had some discussion on the type of materials being used on these culverts and the pipes.
We're not on that one.
You're not on that.
On number two. Sorry,
number two.
Go ahead.
Seeing no further questions, roll call on the motion, please.
Leahy.
Yes.
Caesar.
Yes.
Thompson.
No.
Poodle.
Yes.
Bonnet.
Yes.
Fred Conley.
Aye. John Conley. Yes. Ross. No. Pat. No. Yes. Number 3, Big Papa Creek Levy Culvert Project. Recommendation: General Manager of the authorized to execute contract with Nelson Mock Contracting Incorporated in the amount of $1,683,688.50 for the construction of the Big Papio Levy Culvert Project, subject to changes deemed necessary by General Manager, approved as formed by District Legal Counsel. Committee hereby approved.
We have a motion on the table. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak to this item? Staff or directors? Seeing none, roll call on the motion.
Are we going to conform with the City of Omaha's material? They're using the clay and not PVC.
I don't answer that. Is Mr. Sotak still here?
Yes. The material of the pipe, are we conforming to the City of Omaha standard, or is there a standard that they have?
Are we going to stick with a PVC that Papillion has installed and some of theirs close by, or go with the clay that City of Omaha
has
standardized?
This is sewer. This is levee penetrations. So it's a combination of reinforced concrete pipe and high-intensity polyethylene. This is called, it's not sewer pipe.
You're probably thinking of the Thompson Creek sewer project where we had a clay issue. But
this is from Bob... Harry Anderson, south of Papillion.
This is the project that's from Bellevue up to...
Big Papio. Excuse me. Go ahead.
All right. Any further questions from directors?
Thank you.
Seeing none, roll call on the motion, please.
Caesar.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Poodle.
Yes.
Bonnet.
Yes.
Fred Conley.
Aye.
John Conley.
Yes.
Ross.
Yeah.
Jeff.
Yes.
Leahy.
Yes.
And Chairperson.
Yes.
And for 2017 equipment requirements recommendation, therefore, 2017 equipment requirements be approved as presented to the subcommittee, subject to funding in the FY 2017 budget. Committee hereby moves.
We have a motion on the table. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak to this item? Staff or directors? Ready for us?
NRD equipment?
Yes. That was presented on.
Okay.
Or Monday.
I think having them two-way radios is the biggest bunch of garbage on earth. When you got telephones, everybody's got one on their hip anyway. Why have a radio and that costs, what, $28,000? That's ridiculous.
Can I answer that? You know, when I first started here, I had the same opinion. Except when there was a flood event that we were called out upon, and because of the severity of the weather and the amount of phone traffic, nobody's cell phone worked. No emails, no texts, no cell phone communication. And I was standing on the 36th Street Bridge in Bellevue, and the water was hitting the side of it, and I could not call to... the Sarpy County or Papillion or Bellevue Police Departments to close that bridge. And they are all on that system, and they, the emergency management people and law enforcement recommend that everyone can communicate during an event. And not only a flood event, if there's a tornado, if there's other some kind of a biological attack or anything like that, everybody has to be able to communicate. And can you imagine if you had that, cell towers are destroyed during a tornado. All of those things can occur. These radios will work during those events. And so we want to be able to communicate and keep people safe. And they will do that.
First for us.
My farming operation used to have them same kind of radios. And we could not communicate from my one farm, which is just over the hill, to my home where the base tower was.
I know they're all digital now or going to digital, and I can pretty much, if I'm on there, I can talk to anybody, anywhere, anytime. And so I would strongly recommend, not only for our staff safety, but also for the safety of the public, that we have those ability to communicate.
Any further questions from directors? Director Conley.
I'd just like to reinforce what General Manager Winkler said. At the tornado in 1975, I was a service superintendent for MUD. And we could not get a telephone line, but we had our own two-way radio system, so we had communication. We could not use a telephone.
Of course. Director Bonner?
I'd also like to reinforce that during our hazard mitigation stakeholder meetings, all of the emergency managers were there and discussing the same issues. And one of the biggest things that they were using were the cell phone towers, blasting out messages via cell phone and text. And so they really were heavily reliant on these radios. So they wanted our guys who might be on the levee systems managing the gates in a rainstorm to be able to communicate. It's expensive, but it's necessary.
Any further questions, comments from directors? Roll call on the motion, please.
Thompson.
Yes.
Poodle.
Yes.
Bonnet.
Yes.
Fred Conley.
Aye.
John Conley.
Yes.
Frost.
No.
Jeff.
Yes.
Leahy.
Yes.
Caesar.
Yeah.
And Chairperson.
Yes.
That concludes my report.
Thank you, Director Thompson. Moving on to 10C, Finance, Expenditures, and Legal Subcommittee, Director Rich Teaser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Be it resolved, the minutes of the May 9, 2016 meeting of the FEL Subcommittee are hereby accepted and incorporated into these minutes, and the following recommendations of the Subcommittee are hereby adopted. 1. Surplus property at Papio Dam Site 15A. A. Declaration of surplus property. Recommendation that the proposed 10.857 acres of the Papio Dam 15A project lands be declared as surplus district property, and I so move.
We have a motion on the table. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak to this item? Staff or directors? Dr. Frost.
Going to be a minimum on this?
Is there what?
Going to be a minimum?
Actually, on this, we don't have to set a minimum because we will present all the bids to the directors, and if you don't think one is a pro or there's a high enough one, we can reject them all. But we don't have to sell when you get sealed bids. Usually only in an auction format. Would you like a minimum?
Any further questions from directors? Seeing none, roll call on the motion.
Caesar.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Poodle.
Yes.
Bonnet.
Yes.
Fred Conley.
Aye.
John Conley.
Yes.
Ross.
Yeah.
Jeff.
Yes.
Leahy.
No.
And Shepherdson.
Yes.
9 yay, 1 nay.
Thank you. B. Authorize the GM to accept sealed bids. Recommendation that the GM be authorized to receive sealed bids for consideration by the Board of Directors for the selected bidder's purchase of 10.857 acres of surplus property of the Papio Dam Site 15A project land, subject to changes deemed necessary by the GM and approved or formed by District Legal Counsel, and I so move.
Once again, have a motion on the table. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak to this item? Staff? Or directors, Director Jack.
When do we expect to receive those bids since we don't have a date in here?
We after the meeting, if approved, then we will formulate the notice to be advertised, and I'm guessing it'll be back in maybe July, and we'll give us enough time to, or did you think sooner, Lori? I'm looking at you. Okay.
Bye.
So once we get a date, we'll notify everybody when that is. And it'll be advertised in the newspaper.
Any further questions from directors?
Middle.
Director Bonnet?
I think he's got a question.
No.
All right, seeing none, roll call the motion, please.
Poodle.
Yes.
Bonnet?
Yes.
Fred Conley?
Aye.
John Conley?
Yes.
Ross?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Leahy?
No.
Caesar?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
And Chairperson.
Yes.
9 yay, 1 nay.
Thank you.
I am
2, right-of-way acquisition for Track 1, West Vermillion Regional Basin Number 6. Recommendation to GM be authorized to execute a purchase agreement for Track 1 for $55,000 per acre for an estimated 81.66 acres of land for the West Vermillion Regional Basin Number 6 project. Subject to changes deemed necessary by the GM and approved or formed by District Legal Counsel, and I so move.
We have a motion on the table. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak to this item? Staff?
more directors. Mr. Conley.
I missed the committee meeting. Was there any public comment made about the price versus the appraised value?
No. No comment from anybody in the public. Any further questions from directors? Director Jack.
With the bonding issue being defeated, aren't we getting out there that we're going to have financial problems that we need to reconsider maybe holding this project off?
Actually, this was budgeted in this year's budget, and so actually the bond issue had no bearing on that 6 and 7.
All right.
George Frosch, have a question.
How much of this is going to be excess ground?
I don't think any, but no one's asked us to buy a okay, that's correct. 4.6 acres, but it's not the kind of ground due to its geography or its, I guess I could lack of a better word, that you can just break off. It's right in the middle of the, so it's not something we'll bring back to try to sell.
Right. Any further questions?
Thank you, Amanda, for clarifying that.
See none, roll call the motion.
Bonner?
Yes.
Fred Conley?
Aye.
John Conley?
Yes.
Ross?
Yeah. Yeah.
No.
Leahy.
Yes.
Caesar.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Poodle.
Yes.
And Chairperson.
Yes.
9 yay, 1 nay.
Well, that concludes my report, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Director Teaser. Moving on to item 11, Treasurer's Report, Director John Conley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Treasurer's Report consists of item 11A through 11I inclusive, and I move their approval. Second.
A motion and a second on the table. Is there anybody from the public who would like to speak to this item? Staff? Or directors? Seeing none, roll call on the motion.
John Conley.
Yes.
Ross.
Yeah.
Jeff.
No.
Leahy.
Yes.
Caesar.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Poodle.
Yes.
Bonnet.
Yes.
Fred Conley.
Aye.
And Chairperson.
Yes.
That concludes my report.
Thank you, Director Conley. Agenda item 12, legal update. David Newman of Hush Blackwell. Good evening.
Good evening. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to confirm that all the Fort Calhoun cases, there were four cases that are filed by Fort Calhoun, all of those cases have now been dismissed. The only remaining pending litigation the district is involved in is the Camden combination proceeding. We did recently move for summary judgment a couple of Mr. Camden's claims. Those will be heard by the court and decided in early June timeframe, and once that's decided, then we should move directly to the trial, with the sole issue being the amount of damages that Mr. Cannon's trust is owed due to the easement acquired for the construction.
Yeah, Mr. Newman. This is Mr. Newman's last meeting. He is leaving Hush Blackwell to pursue other careers, I believe, with Union Pacific.
Yes.
That is correct. Is that? So we appreciate his service, obviously, to the district. Unfortunately, we broke another attorney. But Hush has assured me they have one in the wings. And Mr. Graz, obviously, is our contact. And again, that shows kind of the benefit of a firm is, even though we're losing, obviously, a very good attorney who's represented us well, we'll hopefully we'll have another one. So I wish you the best of luck, and it's been an honor to work with you. So.
Thank you, Gordon. I really do want to just express my appreciation for being able to work with you. I really enjoyed the last couple of years. I really enjoyed working with the staff. I'm here to attest you have a wonderful staff that really does go the extra mile for the board and for the district.
Thank you. Thank you, David. Best of luck. All right, moving on to item 13, Chairperson's Report. 13A, appointment of ad hoc consult selection subcommittee for the Little Papio Channel Stabilization Project. We do have one minor change on that. We'll maintain the chairpersons, Patrick Leahy, Fred Conley, John Conley, Tim Fowler, and then Ron Whittle for the committee, and then Jim Thompson will be the alternate on that.
So moved.
We need to go vote.
Okay, sorry. My fault.
All right, and then 13B, the agenda item to enforce of the district policies regarding requests for information presented to district vendors.
Be it resolved that the following resolution is hereby adopted and approved. The general manager is hereby authorized and directed to contact all vendors, partners, and units of government doing business with the district and inform or remind them of the district's policies regarding requests for records and information pertaining to the district's business, and especially to transactions in which confidential information, such as bank accounts and social security numbers, could be compromised or utilized in an unscrupulous manner. The communication shall specifically inform or remind the recipients that Director Scott Japp has no authority to receive any documents or information pertaining to the business on behalf of the district, and that any such requests are to be directed to the general manager for response, and I so move.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak to this item? Staff or directors? Director Japp.
Yes, when I have been denied public information that this board is, and other people probably are privileged to, I should be able to go to receive that information. Never have I been asked for or received Social Security number or any private information. I've only asked for public information that have been denied by directors and staff.
If in fact you felt that you've been denied, then there's procedures to follow to either address that or to try to rectify that. We have not denied you any information that is available to a director or to the public. The issue is when you have the district's financial institution or a vendor contact you to say they have been approached by a representative of the NRD for things like checks and other financial data or contracts, then that is a problem. Because one, they are under no obligation to provide anything that's not of a public nature or any nature. And in fact, it puts them in a very awkward position, as with any business or corporation or entity or vendor, you try to keep good relations with your clients. That puts them in a very difficult position that if they are getting asked to provide something by a representative of the district and they don't provide it, it puts them, and they think they jeopardize that relationship. So that is why we have a policy to all requests for information come through the GM. That way I can make sure that the proper channels are filed to get that information, and then it is distributed appropriately. For you to go to a bank to get something that no one else has access to is not appropriate. And so the board's resolution is to allow me to contact all those folks that we do business with and to remind them this is the procedure. And it saves their legal costs because they have to go to attorneys and say, hey, a representative of the district wants something. Can we do this? And then I have to go to MAR legal cost, and it just gets out of hand, and it doesn't need to be that way. So everyone's wasting time. Everyone's wasting money, and it doesn't need to occur. So we need to remind those folks, if somebody comes to you, approaches you as a representative of the district, that's not right. That's not appropriate. You need to come to the general manager or the treasurer or other folks that are signing off on those documents.
Mr. Winkler, I came to you first to ask for a copy of two the checks that you bought a piece of graph.
Yes.
Without board approval.
And I sent you all of the information that we had, and I sent it to all the directors, so all of them received everything.
And I asked for checks, and you never sent
them. Don't have them. They were electronic transactions.
And
I sent you the electronic transaction. I can't make something up for you.
I asked for a copy.
We don't have the copy.
And so I went to another source.
Yeah.
And they did not go contact an attorney as you just asked.
I guarantee you they. Because I asked them to contact their attorney.
No, they said that I couldn't
do it. Director Japp, we're not going to get into this again. Okay, before we go any further, I think we all realize in this room that we're in the midst of an election cycle. And with that, some people are trying to get maybe a little bit of extra attention. I would hope that over the next several months until November, we can try to maintain a cordial environment within the boardroom and honest dialogue outside of it. I don't think that's asking too much. I certainly hope it is not, and I hope that the meeting is moving forward out of respect to the staff and the time of everybody else that is here, that we can maintain that. Director Leahy, you have a question.
Yeah, just a few. Well, I guess one is a request that when John sends the letter out to all these vendors, partners, and units of government that we do business with, that you lay out maybe a little bit more than the first time why this policy is and why we have to go to the extra mile with Director Jeff and sort of lay out some of the previous mishandlings that he's had, just so they understand, because it is an election year, I can see Director Jeff using this and trying to turn this into they're just picking on me, and without the other side of the story. So I hope your letter to all these folks lays it all out for them, and I don't think you can have too much communication. I appreciate that you've passed along that he's gone out there trying to contact banks and everything else for these documents. Do we know, have any of our vendors, partners, and units of government actually have given him stuff, even though they've been told once not to, to follow proper channels? Have some of them have? Do we know?
Well, I guess I can't answer that. They haven't reported to me that they have, and I don't know. Mr. Jott might be able to answer that. But, again, the unfortunate thing is this is not the first letter that has been sent. And so, obviously, you get new people and you get new employees, and so sometimes it becomes necessary to remind them. But that is the difficult part.
Yeah. And so that's why I want the second letter to lay it all out maybe a little bit more further than just, hey, FYI, remember our policy and follow this. And so in Director Jeff, to lay it all out there. And I'd be interested for those vendors and partners and units of government of ours who do still give him stuff despite these letters. I'd just be interested in that if we were to ever know. I'd hope that you'd pass that information
along. Yeah, if I got it.
Mr. Chairman, fellow board members, I'm really getting tired of the antagonism being directed at our general manager, who I believe is doing a fine job. That being said, this is a policy change, and I would prefer not to single out any one individual board member. And if we are to amend our policies, that Director Scott Japp's name be stricken and replaced with phrase such as any individual director acting without the authority of the board. And I would make that a motion.
No. For clarification, it's not a policy change. It's always not a policy. It's a reminder of the policy.
This is a, what are we doing here? If this is an agenda of enforcement of different district policy. Is this how the current policy reads?
No, the policy is that all requests for information go through the GM. We're addressing a specific circumstance that I don't address with any other director.
It's not a policy change, it's a resolution to execute
the policy
in this manner. And I think, and that was my point, I think he's got to name Director Jeff to reiterate why he's contacting them again, rather than just sort of, otherwise it looks like a generic form letter he's sending out each and every year to all these vendors. It's just saying, hey, and not to say that's a bad thing, but that's not the reason he's sending the letter.
I really don't like the appearance of the letter, but if we do have vendors that we interact with, I think it would be just made clear that there's a privacy policy in place that they have, mm-hmm. that we have, and I don't think it needs to be blasted out to every other municipality. Maybe just our vendors.
Directors.
I'd just like to point out that Director Jaff just mentioned that he wanted a copy of a check. He was looking for a specific document. He doesn't need to see a copy of a check. The documents are here. They're public record, what we paid for things. It's in our monthly reports. It's online. It's public information. He has no business seeing that document. And he's just meddling with district affairs, and it needs to stop.
Any further comments from directors? None, roll call on the motion.
Frost.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Leahy.
Yes.
Caesar.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Poodle.
Yes.
Bonnet.
Yes.
Greg Conley.
Aye.
John Conley.
Yes.
And Chairperson.
Yes.
Eight yeas and nay.
Going to agenda item 14, General Manager's Report, John Winkler. Thank you. I want to go off the script a little tonight. Everyone can read the GM report. Again, I kind of touched on it today. I was honored to attend the National Security Forum Air War College on May 2nd through the 6th in Maxwell Air Force Base, Alabama. The forum was attended by representatives from 43 states, diplomatic and military representatives from 46 allied nations on every continent of the planet: Poland, Malaysia, Philippines, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Morocco, Czech Republic, United Kingdom, Chile, France, Germany, on and on. Every branch of the military was represented, including the Air Reserve, the National Guard, Coast Guard, CIA, Pentagon, National Security Agency, and including the Secretary of the Air Force, who was there as well to do a presentation. Each day from 7:30 to 9 p.m., we had lectures, seminars, briefings, classes, and then we had a signed reading at night. So you only had an hour of free time from 4:30 to 6 to either make calls or check up on what's going on at home. So every second of your day was planned. Topics of extensive study and discussion were a resurgent Russia, a rising China in the South China Sea, Syria, Iran, North Korea, Islamic State, Europe, chemical and biological threats, cybersecurity and threats, and the biggest issue, water and food security. And you think, what is the biggest issue of the CIA and the National Security Agency? And everybody raised their hand and they said, Russia, China, whatever. And it's water, either too much or not enough. And the reason of that is, throughout history, more wars have been fought over water and water security than anything else. And so they spend the majority of their time looking at this and how to mitigate this. Some sobering statistics they put out. 1/3 of the world's population will be affected by water security by 2025. Water catastrophe by 2050. And they have it severest in the Middle East, India, China, and Western U.S. And there's also a projected grain shortfall, talking about agriculture, as much as 30% by 2025. And then the discussion was, why should we care in the United States? Well, the first response was, just think of several billion Chinese nuclear armed without water, or India, or any other part of the country. And there was a F-16 fighter pilot from Jordan who was in attendance. In fact, his relative was the one that the Islamic State put in a cage and burned alive when his plane was shot down or went down. And he said, we have taken in 700,000 Syrian refugees since the Syrian war. And what has that done? They have no water. It's depleted their water table to such that they are running out of water. And then the CIA says, well, what do we do about that? Those people will have to go somewhere and get water someplace. So is that war? Is that migration? Is that, what is that? And so, you know, the overall arching, I think, goal of the whole conference, and when I brought up the example of the Houston flooding and the California, you know, taking a shower with a bucket, those people were there, sitting next to me, and the crazy part is there's a room full of very brilliant people, and they don't have the answers to any of these questions, and they're kind of going, and so it's a little bit unnerving. No one really knows what to do, and so they study these things, they model these things, they say, what do we do to react? But one thing was very clear, what remains throughout history, is they're tyrants, they're bullies, they're thugs. There's always has been. And those very few people start 90% of the problems. If it's local, if it's international, it's whatever. And so, you know, you've heard the saying that, well, if you battle with a skunk, you both end up getting stinky. Rest assured, we have some very dedicated people in the service who, that's what they do 24/7, is they battle skunks and they figure out how to do it. And so we're very lucky. The one thing that I wanted to touch on is, in everyday life you have decisions, and General Welch, who's the Air Force Chief of Staff, told us the story of 9/11. And I don't know how much this has been circulated, but an Air Reserve officer, a F-16 fighter pilot, met her father for breakfast on that day. And he is a United Airlines pilot. And they had breakfast many times. And so she went, she was flying that day. And so she was headed to the base to get her tail number, what they call to get your plane. And then he was off to work. And so when she got to work, all the TVs were on. Everybody was watching what was occurring. And so they got a call. They said, you have a mission. You need to get to your plane immediately. And so her and another pilot got in the F-16s, and they were taxiing down the runway, and they were getting updated information as they were moving. As they moved, they said, it came across their intercom that a United Airlines flight has turned around and is heading toward Washington, D.C. And so you need to bring that plane down. And the lead pilot's response was, we are not armed. We have no bullets. We have no missiles. This was supposed to be a training flight. And they go, well, we don't have time to arm you. And so what that meant is that the lead pilot said, I'll take the cockpit. And she said, I'll take the tail. And so what they were going to do is fly their planes into that airliner to bring it down. And she was convinced that her dad was flying that plane. And before they could get to the plane crashed in the field. It wasn't her father, but it was a good friend of their families that she had cookouts whenever. And so during your day, if you think that, you know, this is a tough decision, what I'm going to eat for lunch or what's for dinner, think of that decision. And thankfully, we have professionals like that who did not hesitate, that I will fly my plane into another plane to protect you. And so that was the best story. So thank you. I'm done.
Thank you, John. Agenda 15, the informational items. For future meetings, the next board meeting will be on June 9th, right here. With that, again, thank you, John, for attending and for bringing the stories back to us.
Appreciate it.
And undoubtedly, it will make the district a bit more of an educated and better place. And I want to thank staff for everything they have done for us as well for this evening. And moving on with that, we are adjourned. Yeah.